Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you ever seen one of your friends on Facebook post that they're going on vacation from Facebook? Don't worry, they say, if you don't see any status updates from me for a while, you know, it's okay, I'm just taking a vacation. But then what, a couple of hours go by and they're back with new pictures of their cat. Clearly, people want to quit Facebook and social media sometimes, but they just can't. Well, what about you? Can you go cold turkey with the Twitter and the selfies and all those things? Or have you? Are we losing out on our quiet time because of this never-ending digital stream? What are we giving up? Call in. We want to hear from you. Can you quit Facebook and all these things going digital? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. You could also email us your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Our guest this half hour is Michael Harris. He's tried to unplug, and he wrote about it with the book The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in the World of Constant Connection. Welcome to The Source, Michael.
Hi, thank you.
So are you a Luddite? Are you one of the people that's anti-technology?
All right, well, two things about that. First thing is you know, people use this word Luddite, but I think it's without knowing what the Luddites really were. They actually weren't anti-technology. They were just pro-human.
Well, they were smashing looms. And,
they were smashing looms, but not because the looms were themselves something that they hated. It was they were actually, like, prefiguring the union ethic. They were rioting against an unethical manufacturing elite that was, what they were fighting against was, like, child labor issues and that sort of thing. Anyway, we can get into that some other time, probably.
Sure, but you know, the typical use of the word Luddite means someone who rejects technology and they want to go back to spinning their own yarn or whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, to that point, no, I'm not a Luddite. Technology, you know, it's not good or evil. It's just this fantastic, dangerous thing, the same way that a knife in your kitchen is dangerous but incredibly useful. So the thrust of the book is really that, not that technology is something we have to run away from, far from it, but something that we need to be more intelligent when we use.
Intelligent? Well, there's my phone's pretty smart. Isn't that enough intelligence for me?
Well, I think that what we fall into is a sort of a passive situation where our technologies use us, right? They are smart, you're right. They're able to, in a kind of insidious way, pull our attention away from things, dominate our lives. I mean, to the point where in the States, I think the average teenager, the numbers are now at around 6 to 8 hours a day. That's how much screen time they're getting. And, you know, if you factor in sleep, that means they're basically spending as much time online as they are in the so-called real world. So at that point, yeah, your smartphone is getting pretty smart at co-opting your life, I guess.
And in your book, you lay out a case that we are getting dumber because of our smartphones, that we're not thinking as deeply, that we have more of a grazing sort of surface knowledge of topics, but nothing.
Yeah, well, the easiest way to look at that is the way that we read online. We know that when we read online, it's a shallower kind of reading. We know from, there have been several studies, some of them are outlined in the book, that show us that when people read online, it's they usually just read like the first few sentences of paragraphs. They skim through things. The lens through which you view the world changes the way you see it. And so when we read online versus when we read a book in our hands, it changes the experience of the activity.
And there's been studies that show that when people take photographs with their phones and things when they go to places, that to actually have a worse memory of that location, that they depend more subconsciously on their phone to remind them of what that experience was like, and they have
absolutely. It's something we've always done. We've always had. It's called a transactive memory. When it shows up in social circles, you know that somebody else remembers something, and that makes you less likely to remember it yourself. But the problem comes up when we know that everything is stored somewhere else, so we don't feel we have to remember anything ourselves. That's where you get into this situation where we've sort of given up on memorizing poetry. We've given up on even, for a lot of people, they don't even know their own phone numbers. And the problem with that is that you're not informing yourself with the richness of that experience.
Let's go to the phone lines. If you want to join the conversation, do you think that you are missing out on some intangibles of life with all of this technology around us, phones and tablets and so much more? The End of Absence is the name of the book, and we're talking with Michael Harris. Let's get to Jordan on the air. Jordan, welcome to The Source. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello, Michael.
Hi.
I just wanted to say to an extent, definitely agree. I was an Apple employee for 4 years, and a couple of us are definitely engaged on Facebook, Twitter, and everything that revolves around social media websites, and we called it off the grid. And I haven't had Facebook or anything for probably about 4 years now, and it's been the best 4 years of my life. I'm an avid reader and traveler, and definitely love listening to NPR. Thank you for accepting the phone call. But I just wanted to say one thing, that I just feel I'm 24 years old, and whenever I travel, I've noticed so many people are just attached to their phones. And during the time of my travels, of course, I am too for maps, but I don't have selfie time. I don't have anything like that. It's more of engaging in my reading or in, like, literature from the Smithsonian that I just visited, just fresh information versus, you know, something that you would just see on a feed.
Okay.
Or just something that's just common.
And so, but you still use these devices? I mean, there's some very handy apps when you're in a strange town, you know, with what to do and where to go.
Oh, definitely. Maps is probably the first thing that I go to, aside from just Googling my addresses on my next move. But aside from that, it's pretty much just all hard book text that I usually am looking for that information.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate your comments. And Michael, reaction?
Well, I mean, I like the fact that she's actually one of maybe 7% of American college kids that aren't on Facebook.
And you call it going Walden, is that right?
Well, in the book, yeah, I call it going Walden. She's called it going off the grid. Walden referring to Thoreau's experience of going out into the woods and kind of exploring solitude by Walden Pond. The one thing that struck me is she mentioned that she definitely does use that mapping app. They are incredibly useful. I use them myself all the time. One of the things that earlier generations, myself included, have experienced, though, when we travel to Europe or wherever, is that experience of getting lost, like really getting lost in a way that I'm not sure digital natives are ever really going to have, or it will be very rare for them anyway.
Sure, and then you should have an app to show me how to fold a map. That's what they really need because it's so confusing. We're going to continue our conversation. We're talking about The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in the World of Constant Connection with the author Michael Harris. We want to hear from you. Have you lost something with all of this digital streaming hitting us in the face 24/7? The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the end of absence and all this connectivity that we have 24/7 in our lives. You know, pre-2000, we didn't have all of this connections, all these emails and texting 24/7. Here are some movie plots that would have been changed had they had that technology at the time. 16 Candles, a text message reading, "Hey, it's Samantha's birthday," and end of movie. Text message also from film called, "Hey, there are two Lebowskis." That would have fixed that movie as well. And in Shakespeare's time, a text message would have gone from Juliet to Romeo: "I'm not really going to be dead. It's really a trick. Talk to the friar." And so technology can be a good thing. It can solve some of the issues that we have in our lives when a connection, we have an emergency, reaching out to other folks. But sometimes we need that quiet time. We need to be able to unplug, but it's not that easy to do. Michael Harris writes about that in his book, The End of Absence. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 210-614-8980. And let's get Greg on the air. Greg, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I was a Facebook user for about 2 years, and it's been a year since I've quit. The one thing I've noticed is that I do have a lot more time to myself, not worrying about checking on a comment that I made, if anybody, you know, liked it or if anybody responded. You know, I'm not worried about impressing people with, you know, witty pictures and stuff. I really focus more on my good friends that I know are a part of my life. And I'm not so concerned about, you know, what's going on Facebook. I can just look at my regular life and just, concern myself with that. I've picked up a number of hobbies, and I feel, you know, I've asked by a good friend of mine whether or not I feel disconnected from the world or whether I feel like I've lost out socially. And the answer to that is, you know, no way. I feel very, you know, very much engaged in what's going on. I think I'm not by any means off the grid. You know, I still use apps like Yelp and, you know, a lot of other apps on my phone. So I'm connected, but at the same time, I can, you know, something that always bothered me about Facebook was that a lot of people put so much, you know, put so much deference on other people's opinions,
right,
and let it become part of their...
There's a lot of politics on Facebook about, he didn't like me, but he liked it, and he liked, I'm not going to like him now. Greg, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate that. So, Michael, Greg's another person who says they've dropped the Facebook, and they just want to do face-to-face communication. So is this a trend?
Well, you know, I think he brings up something that a lot of people are figuring out, which is that when you're online, you put all of your thoughts and ideas up there for the judgment of a faceless crowd. It's those Facebook likes or the retweets on Twitter. We become obsessed with whether or not some algorithmic response is going to be in our favor. And what we lose when we do that is we lose the ability to judge for ourselves whether our ideas are good, whether that dinner that we made was worth eating, or whether our politics are good politics, or whatever. Online mechanisms basically they work to convince us that what we need is to have our lives gilded by this approval system, and I think that can keep us from thinking independently.
So you went through an analog August. What did you do? How did it work?
Yeah. After I began working on this book, I took 30 days off from the internet and 30 days off from my cell phone, just to kind of go cold turkey and have a digital detox.
Was that hard?
Yeah, I would say for the first 2 or 3 weeks, I was going through withdrawal symptoms. As that last caller mentioned, you know, your friends will wonder whether you've dropped off the map. It was definitely hard. By the end of it, though, I had I'd begun to remember what I loved about solitude and daydreaming that my childhood self knew so much about and that I had forgotten.
So you were journaling throughout this experience, pen and paper.
Yeah, I kept a diary, and I just called it my analog August diary, and it ended up being a chapter of the book, of The End of Absence.
And so the great epiphany that you allowed yourself by not having Gilligan's Island on constantly, what?
Well, the epiphany, such as it is simply that every day of my life, after I came back online, because I knew staying offline all the time was not going to be the answer, coming back online, everything had to be a choice. I had to think about my media consumption the same way I think about my food consumption. I think that was the major epiphany for me, is thinking of it as a media diet.
Okay, back to the phone lines. If you want to join the conversation, we're talking about unplugging from social media and reconnecting with your own thoughts. The number is 210-614-8980. Charlie has called in. Charlie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
Yes, I would like to know if you're familiar with any of the current research on what the effects, whether they be positive or negative, what the effects of our digital media might be on things like attention span, working memory, perhaps contributing to ADHD, communication styles, things like that.
Good question, Charlie. Thanks for calling in. So, Michael Harris.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that comes to mind is the American Academy of Pediatrics has put out a report stating that for children under 2 years old, they recommend no screen time whatsoever. And they're not just doing that from a moralistic point of view. They actually have found that later on, instances of attention deficit disorder go up when small children are exposed to too much of the flashing lights and the distracted kind of quality that comes along with a TV or a laptop. Later on, after your child's older than two, they actually only recommend 1 to 2 hours a day of screen time. But, of course, most children have much more than that. So we are beginning to get numbers showing us that, attention deficit disorder is exacerbated by excessive screen time.
We had, hyperactivity and attention deficit disorder before we had Facebook or anything.
We absolutely did. We also had TV before we had Facebook, right? It's a correlation. It doesn't mean that that the one thing automatically leads to the other. There's also studies from Gary Small in California where he's shown that use of the internet does actually change our brain's wiring. So we know that the plasticity of the brain is especially vulnerable to online use.
Okay, Campbell has called in. Let's get Campbell on the air. Hey, Campbell, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My experience with this, as I noticed it in school at the University of Incarnate Word, when I go and sit down in class, before class, everyone seems to be directly looking down at their phone. I remember looking around and all 8 students in there were so tuned into their phone, and I try and make a conscious effort that I'm in school here to learn and to try and keep my phone in my pocket as much as possible. And when I was looking around, I realized that if we can't even communicate with each other anymore, we're so focused with our phone that here we are, the same age in the same class, nonetheless, and we're not even communicating with each other just to have small talk or anything like that. And that's when I really noticed it a lot.
People buried in their phones. So, Michael, thanks for that call,
yeah.
Campbell. So people, are we losing social skills? I mean, people in the classroom, they should be talking to each other and sharing ideas about the class. Instead, they're candy crushing.
Yeah. I mean, anecdotally, this is certainly something we see. I mean, I think everybody at this point has been at a restaurant and seen that romantic couple texting by candlelight across the way, but more scientifically, you can look to somebody like Sherry Turkle, a great professor at MIT, and she studies college-age kids and high school kids, and she's found that absolutely they've become uncomfortable with voice-to-voice and face-to-face interactions and much more comfortable with texting.
Right. So what should people do? Are there like some simple exercises or a test they can apply to themselves to see whether or not they're too attached to their devices?
Well, I mean, one thing you can do is just take a couple days off in August. My publisher, Current, has launched a site called analogaugust.com, which is encouraging people to take 2 days off. And if you do, they'll send you a free Penguin Classic, actually, to read during your weekend off. It's a good experience because it's almost like when you decide to, take a five-day sugar fast, just to reboot your system and remind you what it feels like without that thing. So that's one thing you can do. But then even when you're at work and you have to go online, you can still make decisions like, I'm going to batch process my email and only check it 5 times a day instead of 5 times every hour. Because we know that every time we check our email, it takes another 10 minutes to get back into whatever the task was that we left.
Sure. And what about getting the cell phone, the smartphone, out of the bedroom at night?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, back to the concrete effects of screen technology, we know that the light from it and the constantly changing screen, which triggers our orienting response in our brain, is keeping us awake at night.
Right, and just the potential that it could go off with some nonsense is enough to ruin your
absolutely.
Sleep. All right, well, I want to thank you so much. So Michael Harris, we're going to link to it on our website about that taking that analog August, and people can sign up and try and get that cool book. The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in a World of Constant Connection. Michael Harris, thank you so much. Appreciate you giving us an update on that. This is The Source on KSTX.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.